Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, February 8th, 2015. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. You can rate and review the show on iTunes and Stitcher if you like it. Give it a 5-star review. Tell everybody why you like it. It's tied to my self-esteem. It makes me feel good about myself and the choices that I've made thus far with my life as a human being. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on, Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, Chris Lambert, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. I just woke up not too long ago. I got home really late, like a bad boy. I got home around 3 o'clock this morning. I did a show at Gotham Comedy Club in the Vintage Lounge. The glass half full show. It was in the Vintage Lounge and run by Dan Enfield and Alex Barnett. I closed out that show. It was fun. That the Vintage Lounge is, so there's a Gotham Comedy Club where they shoot the Access TV shows. You have, it's a showcase room. You have your national headliners and they come through for the weekend and stuff. And then they have a Vintage Lounge where they have, independently produced shows basically. And, so that's where I was at. So the top, I think maybe seats, maybe the main room seats, maybe 300, I want to say. Something like that. And then downstairs is about 70 people. So downstairs in the Vintage Lounge, it was packed, bro. It was sold out. There were no empty seats there. And I didn't know that I was closing out the show, but they had me closing out the show. So I did like 20 minutes. If I felt all right, because I hadn't done that much time in a minute, maybe like in about, I want to say about like about a month, I want to say, because most spots are just like 10-minute sets, 8-minute sets. There was this one couple that just talked throughout everybody's set. I got there maybe halfway through the show, and I hate it when people do that. And like, I guess they don't kick people out there, but it was almost somebody, one comic described it as, This woman was talking through everybody's set, but it wasn't like to the point where everybody could hear her, but people knew that she was talking and they didn't shut it down. So when I got up there, I was like, look, I started off kind of rocky because I was like, look, I'm here to do stand up. I'm here to do comedy. You guys, everybody in here paid for a comedy show. I do not want to be a substitute teacher. Please don't make me do that. Then I've automatically just become like this angry black dude. And I was trying to work on some new bits. And I talked about newer bits. Like, what was I talking about? Like black dudes getting killed and stuff. And I couldn't get there because I was angry at this chick. And, I did some stuff and it kind of started off pretty, like, people were like, oh shit, what is this guy going to do? And I was like, I'm going to get you back. I'm a professional. And I got him back, but I got to work out and stuff, but it was just people just try to keep you from spreading your wings. I don't think they're literally trying to do that, but it's just, why come to a show if you're going to get drunk and you're going to talk through people's shit? Like commenting on stuff. Like when I would say stuff, people would say stuff. They'd be like, oh no. Like, just like, shut the fuck up and let me entertain you, you know? But overall, the show was good. So shout out to Dan Enfield and Alex Barnett for having me. Hung out at a bar after the show with Dan Enfield. Got to get him on the podcast. He wants to do it. We'll make it happen. We had salads. We had salads like gentlemen, and that was good. So that was the comedy. Why don't I just give you some dates? I'll give you some dates since I'm talking about stand up. I'll give you some comedy dates this week, Friday, February 13th, Friday the 13th, or Side Piece Friday I was about to say Halloween, for freaking Valentine's Day. I'm going to be at the Whitney Center for the Arts in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. I'm headlining the 10x10 comedy show for the Upstreet Arts Festival in the Berkshires. So I'm really excited about that. Thomas Attila Lewis is hosting it. It's going to be a couple other comics. And then me. So that's good. I'm really excited about that. I get to travel to a place that I've never been. And I get to do stand-up. So I'm looking forward to that. And the 18th, February 18th, I'll be at on the show Big Effing Deal at 2A in New York City. What is that? It's not the Lower East Side, but it's East Village. I'll be there. What else? February 27th, I'll be at the Creek in the Cave in Long Island City at 8 o'clock. And then March 3rd, I'll be at Passenger Bar in Brooklyn, New York at 9 o'clock p.m. There's other dates that you can find out. You can come to. You go to my website, chrislamberth.com. All of that stuff is there. And I will continue to add shows and tell you about them and tweet about them when they come up. So, guys, this is episode 105, episode 105 of the show. Some things to talk about. There's a lot of things to talk about, and I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the Super Bowl. I know that some of your other favorite podcasters may have talked about it. Here's my two cents, guys. That, regardless of if they should have ran the ball to Beast Mode, should have gave the ball to Marshawn Lynch, or they should have did this, who was to blame? That shit hurt me. I was hurting, man. Like, I was hurting hard. I was just like, you're on the 1 yard line and you can't finish. It's just like losing in Madden when you're up, when you know you could win the game and you just fuck up at the end. Like, there's been, when you play people in Madden and you're doing well, and you just all of a sudden fuck it up and throw an interception on the pretty much one of the last plays of the game, and it hurt. And like, those dudes have to live with that, whether they win or lose again. Whether Russell Wilson, if he wins again, he's still going to be thinking about that shit, man. All these players are, until they die, or until they get Alzheimer's from, or dementia from all the hits that they've been taking, they will not forget that. And it's sad. I was hurt, because you know how I feel about my black quarterbacks, and I'm not going to hide it. I'm not going to say that it's all, I mean, you know, it's all right. It's all right. Whatever, you know. That was hurt, man. And that's one of the reasons why I try not to get emotionally invested in sports, because I just don't like the person that I become when I'm like that. And how about the commercials? How depressing were those commercials? The nationwide kid that died. I didn't really pick up on that until people started talking about it. I was like, oh, that kid's dead. I was like, Jesus Christ. And then you start seeing the memes. It's like, I would have ran the ball with Marshawn Lynch, but I died. And it just put a damper on commercials. Like, why the father that's a race car driver that really doesn't know his son, but he picks him up in a Mazda or Nissan, whatever the fuck, and everything's okay because he picks his kid up in a Nissan. It's just, what else? kids with no legs. I mean, just during the Super Bowl, it's like, yo, just what about the Doritos fucking a Pepsi can? Can we see something fun like that? And then you had, like I told you guys last week about Tittygate and Janet Jackson, how you haven't really seen anything really sensual. But then they show the commercial about the Fiat, the old guy's trying to, old man's trying to fuck his wife, his old wife, and he takes a Viagra, and the Viagra pill flies out of the window or something and gets in the gas, what do you call that? The gas, gas portal? I don't, you could tell I don't know shit about cars, and I'm like, ah, the gas portal of the, gets in the gas tank, and then the Fiat grows, like the Fiat gets hard. Like it becomes, like the Fiat's like this, like a red dick that just gets big. And it's like, oh, but you can't show titties, but you can insinuate that a car's ready to fuck. And if you get inside of the car, is the car gonna fuck you? I don't know how I feel about that Fiat. I really don't know. And people were making the, doing the Peyton Manning jingle about that kid. With like, you know, when he's like, chicken parm, you taste so good. You are dead, so you're my son, but you are dead. I know, just like some weird, just funny. People were making all these funny tweets about that. And that was cool. That made watching a Super Bowl and tweeting, live tweeting the Super Bowl, that was fun. What wasn't fun is the Seahawks loss. And I felt bad for Russell Wilson. Maybe they come back. Maybe Cam gets some wide receivers, because one of them won the damn Super Bowl with Tom Brady. And it just comes from like just a simple play. If that had been a touchdown, would we consider Tom Brady to be one of the greats? I still think Tom Brady's one of the greats, regardless, because he's throughout his, with the exception of Randy Moss, Tom Brady has been throwing to dudes that every last one of them, for the most part, with the exception of Rob Gronkowski and Randy Moss, and with the exception of about three receivers, Randy Moss, Gronkowski, and Aaron Hernandez, like, he's thrown to guys that could have their own Disney movie about how they struggled and strive to get to the NFL. Like, that proves how great he is. Now, Joe Montana won four of them, and now Brady's got four. But Joe Montana, he never lost. He was clutch, all that jazz. But he did have Jerry Rice, John Taylor. John Taylor wasn't as sexy as Jerry Rice, but he was probably, he's probably a number one on a number one on a, on another team. I mean, he could, if you were double teaming Jerry Rice, John Taylor was going to get his, you know. Roger Craig, Tom Rathman, Brent Jones. Like, are you serious? So much weaponry and an amazing defense. Ronnie Lott, Tim McDonald. Did he have Tim McDonald back then? Or was that Steve Young era? Charles Haley, you know? Remember Merton Hanks? Merton Hanks might have been Steve Young era. I'm not 100% sure, but he had a dope defense. So Tom Brady, man, like, he got drafted in 2000, and what pick was he? Round six, pick number 199. Dude, like, the only, like, I like his story. Like, if how do you not, how can I like Steph Curry's story and not really like Tom Brady? And a lot of people don't like Tom Brady because he's a good looking guy. He's married to a hot wife. He's married to a hot woman, Gisele Bündchen, a model, and he's killing it. Nobody ever talks about his kid out of wedlock with Michelle, with Bridget Moynihan. Nobody says anything about his kid out of wedlock because he's white, and nobody says anything about it. But nobody says anything about that shit. It's like, because he kind of, I think he just left her. Didn't he just get her pregnant and he left her? I don't know. I don't know the fucking story. But he gets drafted and Drew Bledsoe gets hurt. This dude wins the Super Bowl. He kills it. And there's some story. ESPN always has these behind the scenes stories and all this stuff about, you know, how players came to be who they are. And I fucking love it. I eat it up with a, I could eat that up with a big wooden kitchen spoon. If I could, I love it. It's my favorite. So he talked about his story of him not being heavily recruited at all. And he goes to Michigan. He's playing behind all these people. And then, like, they're talking to him. And he says, I don't know if I told this story on the show before. He was like, yeah. And he almost started breaking down. He's like, well, if I don't get drafted, I'll have to work in insurance. And I was like, fuck. Nah, this nigga, he started crying. And I was like, damn, man, fuck you a little bit, Tom Brady. I work at an insurance company. I've worked in insurance, motherfucker. Ain't that bad. Shit. Tom Brady. But that's the only knock that I really have on the dude. I don't know if they cheated or not, but they always seem to be surrounded by some bullshit. But overall, you gotta play the game and you gotta fucking win. And they won, man. So you can't really hate on him too much. Like, I don't lose sleep over this dude, man. And, you know, he's a great quarterback. He's a great quarterback, man. He's a leader. And the people that he plays with, man, like LeGarrette Blount, is like these nameless. Like, I mean, not everybody that he played with was nameless. But, I mean, like, yo, for him to be as great as he is and playing with the people that he plays with, he's undeniably great. And you gotta give it up to Tom Brady. And I think if they lose that game, he's still one of the greats. Russell Wilson becomes, I think he already is, an elite quarterback. But if he won the second one, he'd kind of be like, he'd be Roethlisberger. Like, they like Roethlisberger, but it's like, I mean, barring, like, besides the rape allegations, they act like that shit never happened to him. You know, they act like that shit never happened. But, I think the media just kind of got neuralized. It's like some Men in Black, just people just like neuralize them and it didn't happen. Some people are just lucky like that, you know? I think he would have just had that status until he just did more, but his numbers weren't as good as Brady's, but they were winning that game, man. He was throwing to that kid. What is it? Chris, the kid that used to work at Foot Locker, catching balls. And, that was going to be, how great was that story going to be? And then the catch from Jermaine Kearse. And they talk about, like, people, they're gonna forget it. Like, that catch is forgotten because they lost the game. And then the whole controversy with Marshawn Lynch, some of it was becoming pretty annoying. It was becoming annoying, and I don't know if it was because, I'm gonna try to talk this out, you guys. I think it was becoming annoying to me. Because I don't know whether it was the media or Marshawn Lynch, because they knew they weren't going to get anything from Marshawn Lynch. So they just kept going back to him and kept asking him these questions, and he kept giving them the same answer. And part of me was just like, well, can't you just go to somebody else? There's a punter. There's a long snapper that's dying to talk to somebody. That's dying to talk to somebody about some quirky shit that he likes to do before games. You know, but that didn't happen. We don't get to hear those quirky stories. And I just stayed away from it. I stayed away from all the pregame stuff. I think I was just like watching. Man, I might have just been clearing out my DVR or just watching other shows or watching movies or something until right before the game came on. And that was pretty much it. So I just stayed away from, I used to love all that as a kid. Now it's just like, I used to dig all the pomp and circumstance around the games, but it's just not the same anymore. Even though Super Bowl, the game itself was good. I had fun tweeting and everything, but the whole Marshawn, oh, I'm going through puberty as I record this episode. Oh, the whole Marshawn Lynch. I don't know. It became really annoying, and people were talking about it. Some people were like, oh, he should talk. And of course, the members of the media are going to tell him to talk, you know, because that's their job, and they want to get all the shit that they want to get out of him. I just think they could have talked to other people that wanted to talk to them and would have actually given them something. I think I was probably less annoyed by Marshawn Lynch than I was about the media's coverage of Marshawn Lynch. Because then you got people critiquing Marshawn Lynch and saying, it was Larry Foote, who plays with the Cardinals now, played with the Lions and the Steelers, was saying, you know, let me read to you what he said, young. Part of what he said. Because this brings up the whole respectability politics thing that's become a term and a thing that's just annoying as fuck. So Larry Foote gets on an interview, a radio interview, and here we go. They say Foote offered this during a radio interview on the Cook and Pony Show on the Fan 93.7 FM in Pittsburgh. Foote offered a salient criticism of Lynch's tactics and went as far to say that he's sending the wrong message to the youngsters in his foundation in Oakland. Here he goes, Larry Foote. You hear in the media, he always mentions his foundation and what he likes to do for the city of Oakland, Foote said. I'm from the same type of urban environment that he's from, and the biggest message that he's giving these kids, he might not want to admit it, is the hell with authority. I don't care. Find me. I'm going to grab my crotch. I'm going to do it my way. In the real world, it doesn't work that way. It just doesn't. How can you keep a job? I mean, you got these inner city kids. They don't listen to teachers. They don't listen to the police officers. Whoa, principals. And these guys can't even keep a job because they say F authority. And the writer of this says, kudos to Foote for saying what so many others haven't. This is what he said, this, because other people were afraid to say it. Look, man, these players are not role models. Why are we people always go to athletes and entertainers to be role models and to get other motherfuckers to raise their kid. And I don't have any kids, but I would like to think that I would use these situations as teaching points, like my dad did. Like my dad, you know, something would happen. Don't do that, I'll beat your ass. If you do what that kid did, I'll beat your ass. If you do that, I'll beat your ass. Like that sort of thing. That's love, you guys. And it just seems like this is a constant. The whole Don Lemon, Cosby, pull your pants up, and then you'll get respected. Then white people, then authority, aka white people, are gonna respect you. And that's not always the case, man. I've said this before in the show, like. You talk about police brutality and kids in the hoodies and the urban apparel. And you say, oh, man, these guys should wear fucking sweaters and cardigans and shit like that. And And when they do, like, they show, you show these, you know, like Selma, you watch a movie like Selma, you watch, you look at pictures of people that are going through nonviolent protests, participating in nonviolent protests. Dogs, they have on a nice suit or a cardigan sweater and some nice slacks. Dogs are fucking tearing the cardigan apart. So a lot of that's, it is, it's bullshit. And I hate, and this is the thing I hate. Maybe they said, they told Marshawn Lynch not to grab his crotch or he would get fined. Now that I can kind of side with the league. If the league says don't do it, you probably shouldn't do it and shit. But at the same time, it's entertainment. And I've said this before in the show. Football is an emotional game. And you've got thousands of people watching, millions of people's eyes are on you, and stakes are always high, especially in the playoffs, and you score, just in general, a regular Sunday, because you only get 16 games, you're slated to have 16 games, what is it, 18 or 19 if you're lucky, like, 19 if you're lucky, if you win the Super Bowl and shit, if you go, you score a touchdown, you can't celebrate. You have to stifle yourself in an emotional game like that. It's bullshit. And a lot of that comes from people saying, oh, everybody's not going to be. And then this guy went on to talk about Jerome Bettis. And Jerome Bettis was a hell of a football player. He's a Hall of Famer. I think it just got announced that he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Amazing running back. He's run over people. Nice guy. Everybody's not going to be a nice, affable dude. Everybody can't be. Everybody's not going to be Barry Sanders. You run 80 yards to make a 30-yard touchdown, and you just toss the ball to the ref. That's not everybody's not going to do that. And I'd like to think if I was a football player and I scored a touchdown, I would probably be like a defensive tackle. Just my body type now, I'd probably be a defensive lineman. If I scored a touchdown, you think I'm just going to give the ball? Here you go, ref. They say, act like you've been there before. Act like you've been there before. I haven't. And I'm going to have a good time, you guys. I'm going to do something. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to do something. And it pisses me off so much when I hear these stories about, I hear people, mainly white people, they for some reason don't want these guys to have a good, they don't want them to show any emotion. You score the touchdown and you give the ball to the ref and you walk expeditiously to the sideline so they can kick a field goal. And that's what it should be. And you're going to be respectful. It doesn't work that way, man. And it just annoys me to hear this constant thing about respect. Then the respectability politics thing pisses me off, because I think that's putting too much burden on the athlete. And a lot of it comes from jealousy. They're jealous of these guys. The whole signing day. Signing the kids, signing, going to whatever colleges they're going to go to get exploited. They become indentured servants. If they're going to play, and if they're five-star kids, they were saying nobody. They said on the Levitard show that no one in the Super Bowl out of both teams were five-star recruits. I don't know, like maybe four or five-star recruits or just super elite-level high schoolers when they came into the league. And it really doesn't seem that way, because you had, I don't know, maybe Felder would know about that. Michael Felder, friend of the podcast of the Bleacher Report, who was in town last week, didn't call me. Thought we were friends, Felder. thought we were friends, bro. No, I hit him up. He's a great guy. Follow Michael Felder on Twitter at In the Bleachers, but follow his Instagram. It's Felder, because that dude can really cook. It looks like his Instagram with any type of food that he has, any type of food that he makes, it looks great. It looks like he could have been in that movie Chef, and it would have been fun. No, Felder, I'm just giving him a little shit, but he was busy. It was signing day, signing week, or whatever you call it. And Cordell Brodus, Snoop Dogg's son, is going to UCLA, and I'm going to try to watch him now. I always say that, then like he's going to be at UCLA, so most of those games are probably going to come on late. And I'll be like, oh, that's Snoop Dogg's son, and then fall asleep on it. But yeah, I just think, like, these guys can't enjoy themselves after they score a touchdown, after they worked so hard all week, and they can't enjoy it. Like, some of them are going to be brain dead in 10 or 15 years. They can't enjoy that. So I don't know. I don't know that. Maybe you got something out of that, me rambling about this, about Marshawn Lynch. But the guy is one of the best running backs in the league. If he doesn't want to talk, then don't talk to him. You know, there's other players. I don't know. Some people said it was a conspiracy that they didn't want him to run the touchdown in, because he would have gotten the MVP, and the league didn't want him to have the MVP. Some people posted a clip of that, like a little article of it. I didn't click on it, but people that I wouldn't expect to post some shit like that did. I was like, oh shit, this person's a conspiracy theorist about this. I was like, oh shit. Yeah, I don't know. I miss football. Now it's time to turn attention to basketball. All-Star Weekend is this week. And that's fun. What do they call that? That's Black Christmas, I believe. So that's going to be a good time. I want to watch that game. The festivities just aren't the same anymore. I think I might have talked about that last year. The slam dunk contest is just whack, even though I'm glad John Wall won, but it's just not as fun as it used to be. And like, there's players that you've never really heard of that are dunking, and it's like, I don't know who's in it this year, but for the past 10 years it's just kind of been whack, and there's not the same excitement. Maybe those rookie games would be fun, but overall, I mean, I'm not that excited. But I will be paying more attention to basketball, and I'll give my hot takes on who's going to be doing what. The Bulls beat the hell out of the Pelicans last night or yesterday, and Anthony Davis got hurt. That I hate when these players get hurt, man. Derrick Rose is looking good. He's looking like himself, but like I always say, your point guard should not be your leading scorer. I don't know if he's the leading scorer this year, but he shouldn't be your primary scorer. It's like your tight end being your best receiver, and that never really works. It probably would have worked for Brady if he won the fucking Super Bowl. His best receiver is Gronkowski. But that's almost an anomaly. I think that's an anomaly. But for the most part, if your tight end's your best player in football, it's probably offensive player, it's probably not a good look. Your point guard shouldn't be your best player. He shouldn't be the guy that's scoring all the points. It's just not right. And that's me having a limited knowledge of basketball and the inner workings of it. But just what I know as a layman, Derrick Rose should not have to carry the team in that way, because you just kind of end up you end up not winning the chip. Where else did I want to go with? I wanted to talk about Chris Paul. Speaking of point guards, he said he got fined for talking shit about a ref that gave him a tech that was an unnecessary tech. And he didn't like Chris Poole. I typed in Chris Poole, Chris P-U-L. Chris Paul of the Los Angeles Clippers fined $25,000 for criticizing an official, a female official. I think he would have gotten fined either way. But since it was a lady, like the great Bill Burr would say, a lady ref, they gave him some shit. Lauren Holtkamp. Yeah, after the game, Paul called the technical on inbounds play on an inbounds play ridiculous, and said this might not be for her. Holtkamp is one of two female officials in the NBA. Paul appeared to say something to her as he waited for an inbound pass after a Cavaliers free throw. He was just upset with the call, and she teched him. But he said something like, he's like, why'd you make that call? And she kind of said, well, because, and he was like, because what or something. And then she teed him up. And then he talked shit about her after. I think in the NBA, they get you when you talk shit about players, regardless. I think that when you talk shit about the ref, regardless. But I think it was, I don't know. But you know, people try to run with it because it was a lady. I don't know, man. Can you say, now you can't say female anymore. Because it just, why can't you do that? Because now I feel uncomfortable saying it. I'll just say lady, woman. Yeah, you can't say that anymore, because what's the guy's name from Empire? Omari Hardwick. There was some article where he said something. He said, yeah, because females and do this or da 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 da. And then like some black website, feminist website, was like, I don't believe that he said this, and I can't believe he called us females. So don't say females anymore, guys. It does sound weird when women say male. When some people, I remember people, because males, they do not do, I don't know, man. It feels weird. Because it's just like, you are a species. Just say a woman, man, girl, guy. I don't know. But I don't think Chris Paul, I think they fine him anyway. Because he said what he said. He said the call was ridiculous. I don't know. I really don't know the big deal about that. But that's just how it goes. When you talk shit about the refs, that's how it goes. Johnny Manziel checked into rehab. And now everybody's, I think if he's going through problems, if he's got problems, hope he gets out of that. Cleveland should have drafted Teddy Bridgewater. They'd have had themselves a quarterback. Would they have made the playoffs? I don't know. I think they should have went with Bridgewater, but they went with the sexier pick. And that's another thing. Like, Bridgewater was one version of Rookie of the Year, like the Pepsi one. And then Odell Beckham got it for another thing. I don't know how that works. It's two different corporations that gave each guy a Rookie of the Year award. Odell Beckham, I was like, Odell, just because he made the catch, I was kind of hating on him a little bit. not outwardly or not like on social media or anything. I was like, he made that amazing catch, but then this dude's numbers are really fucking good, so he deserves it. So if him and what's his name, Victor Cruz comes back, that should be good. That should be some good stuff for Eli. So we'll see. We shall see. Let's talk about video games. I haven't talked about video games that much. I mean, I did talk about The Last of Us with Fonte. Well, damn near anybody. I talk about The Last of Us with anybody that'll talk about the shit. But I saw this week that they're making a new Tomb Raider. Rise of the Tomb Raider. And holy shit, you guys. I am excited about this one. I think it's going to come out in December. But the Game Informer, if you go to GameInformer.com, Rise of the Tomb Raider is the cover. It made the cover of Game Informer, and there's this picture of Lara Croft. You can only see the back of her, and she's got like a winter coat on or some shit. And there's this huge, massive grizzly bear with arrows stuck in him, and he's up on two legs, and he's like roaring and just towering over Lara Croft, and it looks fucking beautiful. And it's only going to be for Xbox One, and I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to do right now. It might make me buy an Xbox One. That the first game, the game that they remade in 2 years ago, was so good. Like that Tomb Raider, early when I first started this podcast, I talked about it and I talked about how great this game is. The reboot. It's an amazing game, and it's right up there. If The Last of Us is the best game that I've ever played in my life, I would say that Tomb Raider is hovering somewhere around there. Like Tomb Raider is like, if you got to put them on a list, that's my 1A. It's almost like the way that I feel about Malcolm X, like Spike, not even just Spike Lee movies, but movies in, it's like you start with Malcolm X is in a class by itself, and The Last of Us is in a class by itself. So then there comes the other movies and games that I like. So I would just say The Last of Us is in a class by itself, and then Tomb Raider's in the top five. Like, it's got to be in the top five best games I've ever played in my life. This is a recent one that they did. It's just great. And this new one, it's like she's in Russia or she's in somewhere in Siberia. If you go to Game Informer's website, they're releasing content about the game every couple days or so. And there's video footage of it comparing the new one to the old reboot. And this just puts me in a dilemma. Right now, I'm not in a place where I'm going to get a new console. I say if not by the end of the year, like early end of this year, maybe early next year, I'll get one. Because right now, I still love my PS3. The PS3 is a great system. But they're not going to make any more games, really. Like, I saw some commercial, I forget the name of this game, but it's some... another one of those post-apocalyptic games. That looked really great. And you see the commercial, like, oh shit. And they're just like, only for PS4 and everything else that you don't have, Chris. You know, it's just like, all right, fuckers. So they're going to make you buy a new system anyway. But like, man, like the 2K, I'm just seeing how great 2K15 looks. And then they're making that Arkham Knight for PS4. That looks amazing. So eventually, it might have to happen, but it ain't happening no time soon. So I don't know, man. They claim that they may make a version of it for other consoles like the PS4. But if it's just Xbox right now, and that's making me nervous, because I'm a Sony man. I've been like that since I was a kid. I've just always liked Sony, and I did have an Xbox. I don't know why I didn't keep it. I traded it in like a crackhead for some version of Madden I don't even fucking have. Ugh. Oh my god. Don't judge me too much, but that was really bad that I did that. That was really, really bad. And I'm sorry. And I'm going to admit I'm a man. And I'm going to admit that I did that and it happened. Okay? So don't judge me too much. But I'm really excited about that game. I don't know of anything else that I really want to play right now. It's just I should play 2K15 more. Maybe I'll just wait till the trade deadline is over and then start another season or something. I'd still go with the Wizards, I think. That game is, it just looks so good. It looks really good. And it's Lara Croft, because she's becoming this amazing explorer that she is when you first meet her in that first version that they made for the PlayStation. And I remember that game. Like, I think I told a story about that before. Like, my dad got it for me, like, at the, like, it was on a weekday, gets off work, and he picks it up and brings it home. And, like, that first thing, you have to fight a bear. The bear is not as scary as it is in this one. But, like, it was scary enough. And then you have to fight the T-Rex. Oh, my God. Oh, that game. I can't wait. I'm excited to see it. And it's probably going to make me want to get an Xbox One. But I don't know. I don't know, you guys. I'm kind of a free agent, but I'm kind of not. Well, I kind of am, I guess. I mean, I have a PS3. I'm going to be thankful for what I have, you guys. I'm just going to be thankful for it. And I'm just going to, it'll happen. If I get a new system, I'll get one. And I'm just going to not. I'm going to just not, like, you know, I'm not going to stress it. But this makes me excited. This gets my video game boner is on fleek because of this game right now. There's other things that I'd like to talk about. Then I'll just get the hell out of here. Stop talking to you. I just finished watching The Leftovers, the HBO show. Man, I really like this. Like, a lot of people were, I don't know what people were. I think I might have heard mixed reviews about this. I think a lot of people were skeptical of this show because Damon Lindelof was a part of it. Damon Lindelof from Lost and Prometheus. People were just like, oh, you know, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. But because a lot of people felt let down. They've lost, the ending let them down, and people were really pissed about that. And I asked if anybody watched the show this week, and some people were like, one guy said it's awesome and it only gets better, pay close attention, lots of foreshadowing, and everything ties together so incredibly well, very well written, enjoy. And so one of my buddies from grad school says, you'll take up smoking. Another comic guy says, I heard it gets better, but I cut out after a couple eps. Great concept, but it was too much of a bummer. And I don't say that about anything with zero comic relief. I could see that. One guy that tried to be funny said, I only eat them. girl from college. So a lot of people love, a lot of people, a good, pretty good sample says that they liked it. Pretty good sample of people said that they did like it. So it seems like it's got critical acclaim. Not, these guys aren't critics, but from the people enjoy it. And so that's cool. And I didn't realize this. I didn't put two and two together, but The Leftovers was a television show based on a novel by Tom Perrotta. I don't know if it's Tom Perrotta or Perrotta. I'm going to say Tom Perrotta, who wrote the novel that my favorite movie, one of my favorite movies of all time, was based on, Election. And if you haven't seen Election, what the fuck is your problem? Election with Matthew Broderick and Reese Witherspoon, which till this day, I think Reese Witherspoon should have at least gotten an Oscar nomination. But at any rate, so let me just give you, basically, I'll read you the premise of this. Okay. The premise from the wiki. Oh, you know what? This is what we'll do, you guys. I'll tell you a little background on Election, and then we'll talk about The Leftovers. How about that? Because you know I like to cross-reference things and give you a little bit of background. So maybe if you're interested, you'll check it out. An Election. Okay, so Election was a 1998 novel, and I remember I didn't know when I saw Election, the movie, that it was based on a novel. It centers around a suburban high school in New Jersey, I don't want to read that synopsis. It's basically about a teacher that gets too involved in a high school election. That's basically what happens. And then there's the things that happen around that plot. And it's really interesting. It's funny. I think it's really terrific. Matthew Broderick plays the lead character, Mr. McAllister. The film is directed by Alexander Payne, and this is the movie that made Alexander Payne one of my favorite directors, because back in the day, I'm still a movie nerd, but I was really, really into it because I used to get the DVDs and I would listen to the director's commentary if there was one on the DVD. And I remember listening to him a bunch of times. I guess because I love the movie so much, but I would listen to him talk about how he made the movie and different things like that. He made this film in book setting was in Jersey. He made it in Nebraska, because that was his hometown. That's where he grew up. And it was just a really good movie. It was funny. It was kind of sad too at some points. And it was just like he showed you these people without commenting on them himself. Like the other characters commented on, you know, how they felt about the characters, but other people that they were interacting with, but he didn't. He didn't say like, "Oh, you should feel this way about this person, because this person is doing this thing." And I gotta watch this movie again. But one of my favorite movies, I read the book after I found out that the movie was based on. I'm rambling like shit on this episode. I hope you guys get something out of this. But I eventually read the book, and I read the book in one day. I don't think the book was that long. Might have been like a couple hundred pages. 200 pages even. So, Yeah, it's really good. And he also wrote this book. Tom Perrotta wrote a book called Little Children, which I want to say, when did the move? The book came out. Let's see. The book came out. Let's look at his. Look at this. Little Children came out in 2004, and that movie came out in 07. And that's another, like, that's a novel that I haven't read. But the movie has Patrick Wilson, OMG, you guys. I'm looking at the, trying to find the, so got nominated into, got Academy Award nom. Kate Winslet, Jennifer Connelly, and Patrick Wilson. So it, the movie just sort of investigated the lives of these people living in this neighborhood, how they interacted. And again, like, just some interest, really interesting, really interesting shit going on with this movie. And the book, I'm sure, is even more descriptive. But yeah, like, I'm a fan of this guy's work. So I did hear about The Leftovers. I remember being in a bookstore and seeing, it's like, oh, Tom Perrotta's got a new book or whatever. And I just didn't put two and two together until a couple of days ago. And I was like, oh, shit, he wrote that? So The Leftovers was written in 2011. And let me just read you the premise of The Leftovers. The Leftovers takes place 3 years after a global event in which many people disappeared, known as the Sudden Departure, which caused the unexplainable disappearance of 140 million people, 2% of the world's population. The story focuses primarily on the Garvey family and their acquaintances in the fictional town of Mapleton, New York. Kevin Garvey is the chief of police. His wife, Lori, has joined a cult called the Guilty Remnant. Their son, Tommy, has left home for college while their daughter, Jill, is acting out. And I gotta say, like, I'm a big fan of like, family dramas and the suburban family dramas. I think you had, around the late 90s, you sort of had this, mid to late 90s, you had these films that came out, like Todd Solondz's is Welcome to the Dollhouse. You had another Todd Solondz movie, Happiness. Then you had The Ice Storm and American Beauty. And they sort of just kind of showed you what suburban life was like beneath the veneer. I always like to say beneath the veneer. And I think that might have been like a script description for American Beauty. But it was like beneath the veneer of these freshly clipped yarns, the yard sales and the picnics and the all this shit that happens in the suburbs. There's a seedy undercurrent. There's like an undercurrent of like just malaise and just like sad people not really achieving what they wanted to achieve. And they're like depressed people and all this crazy shit going on. And that kind of fascinated me. Because that's part of the American dream. You get your house, you get your kids, your 2.5 kids, your two cars, your garage, and all of that shit. And then what else do you do? So what do you do once you have that? And where do you find meaning and blah, blah, blah. And those are the films that I really enjoyed checking out. And, I like it. I like this show. And there's, because these people are a family, you know, there's some emotional tissue around. There's some really emotional moments around. There's you care about the characters, and you know, since Damon Lindelof is involved, the way the story unfolds, you just kind of care about the characters, and you see their motivations, why they did some of the same things that did some of the things that they did, why they're behaving in a certain way. So it's really interesting. It's a good show. I think I want to get somebody on the podcast that has seen the show so we could just really talk about it. And I know I'm mad late. I'm like maybe 2 or 3 months late on, because I didn't watch it live. I just kind of binged on it. Like, it took me about a week to watch 10 episodes. So, yeah, I really, really like the show. Has one of the creepiest, eeriest show intros that I've seen in a while. Like, I kind of fast forward through that shit because it's really ominous and scary, and it gives me bad dreams. So I like The Leftovers. If you haven't seen it and you got HBO, go definitely check it out. I just realized that I could watch HBO Go on my PlayStation. I didn't realize you could download the app. I just said, oh, I'll be watching on my computer. I was like, oh, I could watch it. I like Googled watch HBO Go on PlayStation 3, and I set it up, and it was pretty dope, man. Like, I had 9 of the 10 episodes on my DVR. Dude, I'm watching Outside the Lines is on mute right now, and they're showing these kids, like, this some youth football stuff, and these kids are like ramming into each other. I remember that, man. They used to have this drill called the Nutcracker, where two guys, one guy would have a ball, both guys are laying on their back. One guy's on one side laying on his back with the football. The other guy's a defender. He's laying on his back. The coach blows a whistle. You stand up and you just ram into each other. And that was I fucking hated that drill. I hated that shit. One time this kid hit me and knocked the wind out of me. And I was like, I thought I was going to fucking die. Like, that's when I knew. I was like, maybe this football thing isn't for me. Like, I fucking hate it. But then I was a chubby kid. So I played with the older kids. But this kid that rammed into me, he looked like he was older than the other older kids. It looked like he played like he didn't know any of his family. And he just showed up on the team, and he was kind of like a monster. And he hit me, or I tackled him wrong, and it was fucking, ugh. And these kids do that shit. They fucking... The better drill was this drill called Three Pops, where you get in front of you're in front of somebody and you just hit them. You just hit each other three times, like pop, pop, pop. You just like fucking knock the shit out of each, try to knock the shit out of each other, you know? Like, that was a better drill. Like, I wasn't a bitch. I was strong, and I didn't really, like, my dad told me this. He's told me this before, like, and I think he might have said it when he was on the show a couple years ago, where it was like they would always double team me, and then other guys were getting in and making tackles. I didn't make a huge amount of tackles, but I was getting double teamed because I was strong. I was fucking strong, bro. I just wasn't super mean. But anyway, back to The Leftovers. I think it's a great show, and I want to get somebody on that has seen it so we can like try to break shit down. I wonder if Sean Donnelly has seen the show. I know he likes Lost. And he was thinking about, let me not put shit on Sean Donnelly. That's not true. But I know he's a really big fan of Lost, and I don't know if his love of Lost translates over to The Leftovers. So I'm not going to call him out in that way. But Sean Donnelly, friend of the podcast, episode 30 or 40 something, we had a good conversation. What else? I didn't want to do this, but I watched the first 3 episodes of Girls. I was going to save it until it was over. And then I just kind of, in a weak moment, I watched the three episodes. Not bad. I mean, still, there a lot of Hannah's still fucking selfish. But I did like the last episode that I saw. I think it was called Female Author or something like that. Whatever the... Ooh, and I said female again. Ooh, boy. Hannah's in Iowa in grad school, and she's taking classes. And she kind of called everybody on their pretentious bullshit. So that was interesting. I was like, oh, shit. So I was kind of... I was rooting for Hannah when normally I do not. Oh, my God, man. Dean Smith died. 83 years old. Oh, shit. Damn, man. R.I.P. to Dean Smith. One of the greats, man. One of the greats. Jeez. Ah. All right. Yeah, so Girls, I like it so far. And where else do I want to take you on this journey? We'll talk about a couple movies and then I'll get the fuck out of here. I saw Fury. I rented that on Blu-ray this week. Last week? Late last week? Or this? Last week I rented it. Because I saw a trailer for it on Blu-ray. And some people said, oh, it's whatever. You know, I liked it, man. It was all right. It's your typical standard issue war movie. But I saw the trailer and I was like, oh shit, this looks fucking great on Blu-ray. I gotta check it out. Blu-ray will make you give a lot of different movies chances. Movies that you probably wouldn't give a chance. But it's a big budget movie. It's got Brad Pitt. My boy Shia LaBeouf is in it. And I've heard things about the homie JL was talking shit about Shia, like he was playing your caricature, your archetypal Southern soldier, like, Lord, you know, we're gonna go in this war, we're gonna win, we're gonna fight. Dude, man, Shia is the shit, man. Shia is the man. Like, I like that dude, and he was good in the movie. And he just, I don't know, man. He's the Hollywood equivalent of a troubled wide receiver. He's like Josh Gordon, man. Like, I just, he's like a person that you fucking root for. Cause I knew that kid, and I've probably talked about him before in the show, but I feel like the dude is really talented. He's an American actor, and you just root for this dude, man. Cause he is good. He is talented. And I knew he was talented when I saw him in this movie. I think it might have been 2003 or 4. The Battle of Shaker Heights, where it was one of those Project Greenlight movies where they didn't know what the fuck they were doing. And they were trying to make the movie and it was all this drama. But in the midst of all of that chaos that it took to make that movie, Shia LaBeouf was the lead and he did his thing. You know, he was good in the movie. He hit his mark. He was a professional. And I never forgot that. And I see him in these movies. I like, you know, I guess one of my favorites of his would be Disturbia, and I would have to watch that again, but I do own that movie. Disturbia, Eagle Eye, I was a little disappointed in, but it wasn't really his fault. It was just kind of like the movie was just like, it's just like Enemy of the State with a white kid, basically. But I fuck with it. It was straight. That's another one that's another one I own. Yeah, man, I like Shia in the movie. He did his thing, and I think I got. I wanted to see if they have like some kind of a brief synopsis. And go back and see where. Okay. In April 1945, the Allies are making their final push in the European theater. A battle-hardened army sergeant named Don War Daddy Collier, Brad Pitt, leading a Sherman tank and a five-man crew, undertakes a deadly mission behind enemy lines. Hopelessly outnumbered, outgunned, and saddled with an inexperienced soldier, played by Logan Lerman from something, Perks of Being a Wallflower, He was the lead in that. Good movie. In their midst, War Daddy and his men face overwhelming odds as they move to strike at the heart of Nazi Germany. And really, this movie, to me, I fucked with it. It was just like a, it's like a standard issue war movie. You want to see, you know, people shooting each other and shit. The blood and guts in these movies are getting more and more realistic, but I don't think I've seen, I would have to say Lone Survivor is the most realistic, like blood, like shooting out of people type movies. Like the violence is seems to be the most realistic that I've seen in a while, that I've ever seen to date. But, yeah, man, Fury is a good movie. It's just a solid fucking war movie. It's nothing. It ain't. If you're in the mood to see something like it, go see it. Check it out. The stakes are a lot lower when you go to Redbox or you check something out on demand. You know, it's fine. You know, you get what you pay for, basically. And it looks good on Blu-ray. And then this week I was kind of in a pinch. Like I got nervous about this movie. I wanted to see it. I've been wanting to see it for a long time. A Most Violent Year. It just got wide release 2 weeks ago and it seems like it's not doing that well in the theater. So they're taking it out and I'm looking at my the movie showtimes and I'm just seeing like, oh, what's opening this week and what's, you know, when such and such playing. And I was like, okay, I want to see, maybe I'll go see A Most Violent Year this week. I was really excited about it. And I found out where it's like, oh, it seems like it's not going to be in a lot of theaters, like theaters near me. And I was like, fuck it. I'm going to go today. I went on a Thursday and I went to the Bowtie Cinema in New City, New York. I think that might be the second time that I went there. Second or third time maybe that I went there. And I really like, it's just a small, it's like a small town in Rockland County, and it's in a strip mall. And I just, which one of my coworkers told me it used to be a bar or like some kind of like dance club. So I went and saw that. And, I really fucking like this movie. This movie, I don't know why. I don't know. Like it didn't get nominated for anything. It's just kind of one of those slow burn movies that's just, I think it's really good. And I said it reminded me of a gangster's origin story. It's like Batman Begins for gangster movies. And it kind of had someone on my Facebook. So I talked about this movie. Let's do this. I want to just kind of give you. So this movie takes place in 1981 and it's about this guy who's the owner of an up and coming oil and heating company. And it's Abel Morales is the guy that owns this up and coming heating oil company. And it's played by Oscar Isaac, who's a fantastic actor. And the first time I remember hearing anything about him was Inside Llewyn Davis, which he was great in. The movie had its issues, but I think I remember when I talked about it, I remember liking it and being invested in it. And it is a good movie. He's a really good actor. He's just really good. And he's trying to grow his business. And then there's other competitors that are trying to keep him from doing that. That's basically what this is. That's basically what this movie is about. And he has this wife played by Jessica Chastain, who's also a fantastic actor. She let them titties out in this one. You don't see them. You don't see the nipple. But she let, like, this was the first time, like, I noticed Jessica Chastain got them titties. And I was like, damn. I was like, okay. I was like, I see you, Ma. Because she's already won an Oscar. She won an Oscar for Zero Dark Thirty. And it's not like she's, it's just, that's the character. I think that's just like the character that she plays. And it's just like, oh shit, I didn't know, Jessica. My bad. I ain't know, young. I ain't know that you had it like that. And so she let them things out, man. And this movie is directed by JC, it's written and directed by JC Shandor, who did Margin Call. I think and All Is Lost. All Is Lost is the movie with Robert Redford. He's just alone and at sea, and he's like in trouble. I haven't seen it. Margin Call, I started watching it and just didn't finish it. So maybe I'll probably go back to that and watch them, because I really like this movie. I would say the only issue that I had, you know what? Okay, I'll just say again, part of me feels like, and I didn't want to tweet this because I wanted to just kind of think about it a little more, but I don't know that I've seen anything like this before, in a way. But somebody, talked about it on Facebook, just said, you know, really enjoyed The Most Violent Year. It plays like a gangster's origin story. Oscar Isaac is one hell of an actor. And then you have, you know, people comment on it. The homie JL Covan responds, that's a great way to describe it. Then one of a guy that I know from theater school, one of the on the staff, one of the faculty members, he said, I liked him better when it was Al Pacino in The Godfather, but it was a decent movie. What I would say to that was, and I didn't really want to get into it on Facebook because I just kind of like to let people say what they say. And I should have read you like the Super Bowl thing. Maybe fuck it. I liked him better when it was Al Pacino in The Godfather, but it was a decent movie. I think he's more Robert De Niro in Casino than he is Pacino in Godfather. I'm going to admit to you guys, I've seen The Godfather, but it's been a long time. I know it's an epic classic movie. I just haven't seen it in a long time, so I'm not super familiar with it. Casino is one that I've seen a lot, and it just seems like the De Niro character in that was almost parallel to this one, although it wasn't. You don't see where Abel Morales ends up, but you kind of see where De Niro's character in Casino ends up. Because it's like he's becoming a guy that could potentially be a gangster, or maybe he won't. But the last scene that he has with David Oyelowo, who plays an up-and-coming DA, it's like that kind of puts everything into perspective, where it's like, oh shit, this is what it is now. Because throughout the whole movie, I'm watching it and I'm like, okay, all right, where is this going? You know, you kind of got some things set in place. Like, he's trying to get to a certain level, and anybody can relate to that. You know, I'm trying to do this in my business and this is happening. And there's moments where it's like, you know, he's not a full gangster yet. When the way that Jessica Chastain behaves around him, like, and I don't want to give anything away until maybe, like, I don't know, somewhere down the line, if I'm talking to somebody that's seen it, like, maybe we'll segue into something. But it's just kind of one of those movies where it's like, the title's a little, okay, and the title's a little misleading too, because this movie has violence in it, but it's not jam packed with violence. I think people don't walk into this movie expecting to see a super violent movie, like people's heads getting cracked open all the time. But when violent shit happens in the movie, you're sort of like, oh shit, like, this is, ooh, it's some brutal shit that happens in the movie, and there's some tense moments, but it's not a super violent film. but it's just there's moments in the way that he interacts with his wife, and it's just like, it's stuff going on, and so there's levels to this shit, young. And there's stuff happening in this movie that's like, man, I like this shit a lot, because I was kind of like, because I think people were kind of, what's the Rotten Tomatoes rating on this thing? What does Rotten Tomatoes think? How do I want to? You can tell that I'm not great at navigating. I have so many windows open that it's just ridiculous, you guys. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 90%. Why is this shit kind of not in the? Maybe it's just not that. I don't know, but it's like AMC. It's weird because I would look at the schedule, and most of the AMCs in my area are like a 12 o'clock a.m. showing, like a midnight showing. And it's like, why are these movies not getting? Why they not getting that love, young? Why is it not getting the love? And I think this movie came out like it was trying to go for the Oscar. Like maybe it had a chance, but it was like, I wouldn't even say it was on Kill the Messenger status. I think you could have given, you could have gave Oscar Isaac a nom for it. It's Oscar worthy, but it's like he didn't give a showy performance. It was just a good ass. It's just like, this is a good ass movie, and there's some good ass acting going on, but it's just not like, ah! But then if you did nominate him and they had to show a scene from the movie where he's acting his ass off, there's a couple scenes, but it's not super showy. It's just not a showy performance. And Jessica Chastain gets to, you know, do her thing. Oh shit. And see, guess who shot it? Bradford Young, the dude that I was raving about for Selma. This motherfucker is a beast. So he shot that too. There's one thing though about the lighting. I don't know. Like, it's like, maybe it's a choice that when I look back on this movie, where it's like, okay, I see why they're doing this, but I can't fucking see the guy. I have an idea of the symbolism that you're going with, but I'd like to see the guy's eyes. I don't know. There's a lot of darkness in this movie, and it just, maybe that's just the way that it is. But Bradford Young, again, man, he shot this movie. So this guy's doing his thing. He's going to be like the Pharrell of fucking cinematography. Yeah. So I really liked The Most Violent Year. I think it's really good. It's an adult, a grown-up movie. It's just a grown-up movie, and I liked it. Some people might think it's boring, but I like to see a good story, good acting, and it just kind of, the ending just really sums everything up well. Not in like, it's like a foreshadowing, foreboding, and comedian June Chung posted on my comment thread a little documentary short about, that was from the production company A24, about what it was like to live during 1981, in particular the Lower East Side in particular, and like people that that were around back then, and how violent and seedy everything was, and how, you know, just what the aura was like during that time. And, you know, and that's pretty neat. Like, it's kind of like a little companion piece. It's probably something that'll end up on the Blu-ray or DVD when it comes out. But I highly recommend that movie, A Most Violent Year. And check out Fury at Redbox. That's the end of the show, everybody. I hope you got something out of this. I hope I didn't ramble too much. And I hope this has entertained you, through your TPS report, through your time on the treadmill or the treadmill. You can tell I'm fat. I say treadmill instead of treadmill. So I hope it got you through that. And, RIP to Dean Smith, RIP to Charlie Sifford, one of the, first black golfer. Let's get into that a little bit before. He's just one of the first black golfer on the PGA Tour, passed away, this past week at the age of 92. So pioneer, look him up. There's no Tiger Woods if there's no Charlie Sifford. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. Have a good week. I'll talk to you next time. Peace.